south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
I'm doing this show today on another national Latin American holiday. Did you know that Latin Americans have the most national holidays in the world? I'm talking days off for the regular working public, that is, the working public on the books. However, few Latinos who work for themselves and are off the books, you know, street vendors and such, they never take as many days off as regular working stiffs because, well, they've got to make hay, or is it tortillas, while the sun shines, as they say. So if you have a business that's on the books, that is, registered with the municipality and you pay taxes, not something I really recommend, by the way. You've heard me say many times that it's much better to skip the brick-and-mortar business and go for an online business. It's the best all around. There's much less stress involved, it's less complicated, and better yet, you'll find, if you have the right lawyer, that you can often completely avoid paying taxes or end up paying an amount that's so insignificant it really doesn't matter. Now, I'm not advocating you do anything illegal, but I'll tell you, Latin lawyers know every trick in the book. I'm talking about how to tiptoe around taxes, and if you don't believe me, tell you what you do. Once you've settled on your own Latin lawyer and get to know him, ask him how much he pays in taxes. And he'll give you a general percentage. He might say 10, 15, or 20%, which may not sound insignificant to you. The thing is that 10, 15, or 20% that he's quoting you is generally based on an annual income figure that's a small fraction of what he really pulls in every year. In other words, the income figure that he reports to the government is never the real income figure, if you know what I mean. Hey, I'm telling it like it is. You want me to lie and tell you businessmen, including lawyers and physicians, etc., actually report their real gross income to government for tax purposes? No way. This is Latin America. Just keep in mind one thing. Latin American governments have their version of the IRS and tax bureau, but they don't have a SWAT team-style enforcement branch like the U.S. IRS does. Down here, no one shows up at your door, takes your files, and locks your business down because they think you've been playing games with your taxes. And why is that? Well, that's because everyone plays games with their taxes, including 99.9% of government officials. They're the most unrepentant scumbags of all. So again, my advice, when those business ideas start flooding in, and they will, believe me, stick to an internet business if at all possible. The thing is, so many expat wannabes are sitting up in the States right now, working on that plan B, seriously thinking about what they're going to do with themselves once they get down here, with more than half of them thinking they're going to open a restaurant or a mom-and-pop hotel. It's a cliche, all right, but all cliches are based in fact. Nope, I wouldn't recommend it, but if that's always been your dream, have at it. Just understand, with any business that's brick and mortar, you'll end up on the books. That means, along with the regular salaries, you'll have to pay for all those national holidays and give your workers the time off or pay them extra if they're working those days. Though the number of national holidays throughout various Latin American countries varies a bit, with the average being between 18 and 20 a year. You'll find some of those holidays don't make sense, and when the people get the day off, they don't even know what it's for. It's kind of crazy. Everyone knows they get the day off, but the conversation ends there. Unless you're talking about a major holiday like Christmas or Easter. Easter's called Semana Santa down here, by the way. Translation, Saint Week. Yep, Saint Week. All right, so Latin American national holidays, that is days off, totaling 18 or 20 days a year, depending. Meanwhile, in the U.S., you get around 10 paid holidays. About half of that. Now, along with the regular national holidays, there are a few other ones thrown in for government slugs and bank workers. They get 25 or more. That's more than a month every year, considering there are around 20 working days in the month. Though you should remember, here in Latin America, most people who work at factories and retail outlets work a 44-hour work week, with that extra 4 hours being Saturday morning till noon or 1. So for Latinos on the books, they're working 44 hours a week. Now, speaking of jobs and work, here in Latin America, there's a certain kind of odd retro thing going on. You'll see it all the time. namely salesmen walking down the street, mostly guys, pushing a cart or toting a big bundle full of brooms, mops, shovels, sticks, toilet plungers, you name it. Now, I don't understand how they make a living at it, but they must because you see them all over the place. So if you live in a regular house or apartment in a neighborhood, you will on occasion get these guys knocking at your door. Though if you live in a high-rise residential tower or in a gated, guarded community, they usually aren't allowed in. They won't get access. The thing is, down here there are so many people living on the edge, yet they work and are out there trying to make a living. So sometimes you just feel sorry for these guys and you buy a broom or a mop just to give them a little business. It's true us gringos and expats are soft touches when it comes to that kind of stuff. What a tough way to make a living, huh? I'm amazed at the sheer quantity of people that are just basic peddlers. Of course, up in the States, that kind of sales job just doesn't exist. People don't knock on your door trying to sell you stuff. And if they did, you'd probably be a little suspicious and might not even answer it. You know what it's like. Up in the States, it's rare for someone to show up at your door uninvited, unless it's the Girl Scouts and their cookies or the Jehovah's Witnesses. By the way, I just read somewhere that the Boy Scouts of America filed bankruptcy. Oh man. Am I glad I don't live up by you. Oh, and speaking of the Testigos de Jehovah, that's Jehovah's Witness in Spanish, I just had a visit from a couple of those ladies 2 or 3 days ago. I must be on their route. I'm sure they've got me down as a soul that's in need of saving, because this isn't the first time. And when they arrive, I always use the same line on them. Works like a charm, just like they use their same line on me, which so far hasn't been the least bit successful. For them, it's, have you got 5 minutes? Have you heard the word? For me, it's, sure. I'll give you 10, as long as it takes for you to help me wash my car or clean my windows. I say it very nicely. You can talk while you help me. You know what? They always find a way to wiggle out of it, to say no. Works like a charm. They're the ones who back out. That way you don't have to give them an ugly look, slam the door in their face, or be rude about it. Go ahead, try it sometime. Oh, and as far as the neighborhood salesman knocking on your door trying to sell you brushes and shovels and stuff, man, you got to see how much junk they can carry. I don't know how they do it. Anyway, one time, my mother and brother were visiting me in Roatan, Honduras, and there was just such a knock on the door, and my mother answered it and politely deferred to me because I'm the guy in the family who speaks Spanish. And when he left, by the way, he made a sale because my brother, king of the junk food splurgers, plugged up the toilet. A very unfortunate but frequent occurrence here in Latin America, especially when there are gringos in the house. It wasn't pretty. The verdict? Due to vastly undersized plumbing pipes, as usual. My mother, who at the time was something like 85 years old, said to me after the guy left, she said, when I was young, we'd get a knock on the door once in a while, and it would be the Fuller Brushman. That's right, Fuller Brushman. And there were door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesmen, too, like the Kirby guy. In fact, she said there were so many of them roaming the country, they actually made a movie about it. Called, what else? The Fuller Brushman, with a famous comedian at the time named Red Skelton. I suppose some of you real old-timers might remember that guy. He used to have a weekly TV variety show back in the 50s and 60s. You know, I remember that guy a little bit. He used to play a rumpled bum named Clem Cadiddlehopper. The one thing I do remember is that he was not funny at all. In fact, when looking back on a lot of those 50s and 60s so-called variety shows, comedians were just not funny at all. Guys like Milton Berle, George Burns, Jack Benny, Phyllis Diller. They were distinct personalities, all right, but they just were not funny. I guess back then that's all they had. Till guys like Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, and George Carlin came along. To me, anyway, comedians were just plain awful. Or maybe I was just weird. Yeah, that's probably it. Oh, and speaking of people walking around selling junk on the street here in Latin America, anytime you're in a middle or lower middle class business district, mostly crowded business districts, you know, where there's some kind of controlled chaos going on. You'll see guys on corners or walking around with Coleman or Chinese clone coolers selling all kinds of soda and fake fruit juice from cans and bottles they pour into the cheapest, thinnest plastic bags, and then they stick a straw in it. And of course, the guy that hands you the straw manhandles it at both ends with his grimy fingers. Can you say Montezuma's revenge? Well, luckily, or unluckily, depending how you look at it, a case of Montezumas from street vendors is mostly an attack of amoebas. That's why every local pharmacist has a ready supply of big pills. Yep, they're pretty big, all right. They look like Alka-Seltzer tablets. but they'll sure wipe out an amoeba attack in something like 24 hours. Now, when I first realized that the amoeba thing was so prevalent down here, and that the cure was easy, just don't eat street food and don't drink those soft drinks from plastic bags. Or just do what everyone else does and buy a couple of cheap pills when you get explosive diarrhea. Sure, when you're affected, they've got a 24-hour cure, but why go through all that? It's all completely manageable and due to unhygienic practices. It's so obvious, but why haven't they learned? Question is, why don't parents and teachers talk about this stuff to their kids? Who knows? Maybe they do, but it doesn't seem to be having much of an effect. And believe me, when you go into the average middle-class Latin American's house, you'll see there's not much attention paid to hygiene in the kitchen, that's for sure. Though I have to admit, many times I've been driving way out in the boonies in various Latin American countries, and I'll see a poster or billboard with a stick man or stick lady demonstrating the proper way to wash your hands in the sink. Obviously, few people are paying attention. But as far as quenching your thirst by drinking out of a plastic bag, what makes it worse is that when people are finished drinking their sodas and fake juices, they toss the bag and the straw on the street. And when it rains, all that stuff gets stuck in the gutters and drains. So with every downpour, there's a mess. And where do you think that stuff ends up? In the waterways, making the pollution all the worse. Though I have to say, over the last couple of years, there's been a change. People are more and more putting their garbage in trash cans and bins. Of course, they've always done that in their own private homes, but in public, it's always been a different story. Whereas in the past, in public places, there were no bins, so people just tossed their junk on the ground. These days, people do use them. Problem being, government workers are so lazy and lard-ass that bins just don't get emptied regularly or enough. They're always maxed out and overfilled. So Latinos are starting to have the will to do the right thing, but they don't have the means. All right, speaking of water, here's an email from Lester. He says, Johnny, if I buy some land out in the boonies in Latin America and have water on my property, a river, a well, or even if I'm inland and have some lakefront property, what are the rules about water rights? If I have a garden or a small farm, can I use that water? I'd like your input on that, Johnny, because I think I'm going to be moving next year south of the border, with my object being to live in the boonies, getting off the grid, going organic, and growing as much of my own stuff as I can. Signed, longtime listener, Lester. Okay, listen, Lester. Here's my take on it. Though it might not be legal, you can get away with siphoning off some water if it's on or abutting your property. People down here do it all the time. It probably is illegal to some degree. There's something on the books about it. But if you're not a pig, you can get away with it all day long. Because here in Latin America, there are no water police. Oh, and if the shoe was on the other foot and someone was stealing water from you here in Latin America, if you were to call the cops, believe me, unless it was some kind of theft on an industrial scale, chances are no one would even show up to hear your complaint. Though I'm not advising anyone to try it. You know, I see it happening all the time. In fact, you longtime listeners probably heard me tell a story a long time ago. I was living in a gated, guarded community. One day I asked the guard at the front gate why there was a new fontanero. Fontanero is a guy who's in charge of the well and the pumps and the tubes that bring water to the houses in a gated, guarded community. It's called a fontanero. Notice it has the word fountain in it. Makes sense. It's logical. Anyway, the guy at the front gate told me they fired the old one who'd been around for some years because it was discovered that every Sunday evening, when there were no maintenance guys or machete-wielding gardeners around, the old fontanero was running a big tube from the subdivision's well to a farmer on the adjacent property, selling him water that was never his to sell. In the end, he got caught and fired, but guess what? No one called the cops or filed charges on the farmer that set up the deal. The question is, after so many weeks, months, even years of stealing, why do you think no one called the cops or pressed charges? Because the priority of such a crime here in Latin America is so below the radar and considered so insignificant. It would be futile, a complete waste of time to take it to court. All right, speaking of living out in the boonies, or the campo, as they call it here, the camp, let's talk a little bit more about security when you're living in the boonies, the campo. In fact, I'd say that's the number one concern of gringos and expats who are thinking about living out in the countryside. Number one, it's good to make friends with, at least talk to, and be civil to the locals. They know the rumors and the scuttlebutt. They know the good guys and families from the bad ones. So don't do what idiot Latinos with money or guys with a lot of dough like John McAfee do when they decide to live out in the boonies. That is, build or live in ostentatious houses or even mansions, plainly visible for the poor locals to see. Sure, you can have a nice, beautiful, extravagant-looking house, but keep it well out of sight, so people walking by can't see it. Or you can do what a lot of smart gringos and expats do. They keep their house rather plain and Spartan on the outside, though often with very excellent landscaping and gardening. Nothing wrong with that. But they put their extra dough and effort into the interior of the house. They go big on the living spaces. You've heard me mention on past shows that the biggest telltale sign of an idiot Latino with money, besides having a Chevy Tahoe or Suburban and a chubby bodyguard or two and a Sears suit that's two sizes too small, is that he's got the biggest, gaudiest house in the hood. That's the plan. He wants all his neighbors, friends, and enemies to know he's got dough, never processing the fact that in the long run, showing off like that means nothing but trouble. Believe me, you don't want to be that guy. The key is to live smart, live simple, and without complication. Don't ever forget that when you come down here to buy, build, or rent. And don't forget it when you're shopping for a car. If you show off what you've got like a for brains wrapper, expect problems. You'll get them. And if your reason for moving out in the boonies is because you consider yourself a prepper or survivalist, remember there are no such words in Spanish, nor are there organized groups or YouTube sites or blogs addressing those issues for Latinos. Why? Because even Latino city dwellers are vastly more prepared than your average stateside city types. Seems all Latinos have relatives with farms and gardens. That means there's always more than one person at any Sunday dinner table who can pluck chickens, skin, and dress out a deer, and who's an expert with a machete. Can you say that about your Sunday dinner crowd back in Cleveland or Milwaukee? Well, maybe Milwaukee, except for the machete thing. Yes, and I said skin and dress a deer. They have deer here in Latin America. They're all over the place, out in the campo, that is. But they're really little guys, more like big dogs. Don't think I've ever seen one that's over 100 pounds, but they're certainly out there, all right. Bottom line, if you, like me, are one of those people who is expecting an imminent international meltdown and or natural disaster and want a place to escape the ensuing social upheaval, you're in luck if you come down to Latin America and get that Plan B going, especially if you're in the Altiplano. If you're one of those people who believes climate change is turning the world into a sauna, remember, the Altiplano, depending on your elevation, is 10 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than at sea level. Not only that, you have tremendously fertile soil, abundant water, sometimes way too much, and 3 to 4 growing seasons. Much of Latin America is what you might call a prepper or survivalist's paradise. And if you're out in the campo, you'll be surrounded by other survivalists. Only no one's ever called them that, and they don't know that they are. Out in the boonies, they're called campesinos, and they've been surviving off the land for centuries and have learned how to deal with whatever calamity is thrown at them. In fact, they've come to accept a certain amount of disruption of their routine, and they can certainly teach us gringos and expats a thing or two. In fact, in some remote areas of the boonies, they still use the barter system, and most of them still get around by foot, bicycle, and some old-timers still have horses. In fact, just yesterday, I saw an old-timer with a horse-drawn cart. A couple of months ago, I saw a couple of oxen yoked together, pulling some kind of harvesting machine. Man, was that a sight to see. Think of it, oxen, right out of a Paul Bunyan story, except I think his ox babe was blue. So anyway, if you're really interested in having that Plan B in the boonies, get to know the locals, help them out a little bit. Little favors and things from you are huge for them. For example, if you're in one of those little corner tiendas and you see a neighbor kid, buy him something. Piece of fruit, maybe, something healthy. But don't give him money. Give him money, he's going to buy Coca-Cola and some junk food. Do talk to him, even if your Spanish sucks. I'm not saying get involved in their activities all too much. Sometimes if you get too close, there can be awkward moments. Like, for example, if you get asked to be little Juanito's padrino, whoa, it's hard to say no. That's awkward and could be taken as an insult. And if you do accept, you'll be tied to that family and that kid forever. Remember, you're coming down to simplify your life, not complicate it even more. Then what's an easy way out of that situation if you're asked to be a padrino, godfather, to someone's kid? Simple. Just tell them you'd love to, except you're a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness. or Lutheran or Methodist. That'll kill the idea in a hurry because, you see, 90% of Latinos are Catholic, and in order to be a padrino, a godfather, or madrina, godmother, you have to be of the same faith, Catholic, or it ain't kosher. Come to think of it, you could tell the parents you're a Judeo, a Jew. That'll get you scratched off the short list in a hurry, too. Oh, and do remember, if one of the local Latinos does hit you up as a prospective godmother or godfather, it's probably not because you're all that great of a guy or gal. What's the ulterior motive? Remember, you're a wealthy, smart, world-traveled gringo. At least, that's what they think. And what a great addition to the family. Let me tell you, and I know this from experience, you don't want to be that guy or gal. Speaking of getting your plan B going, before the worldwide reset button gets pushed, and it looks like we're getting pretty close, I got an email here from Miss Minerva. Wait a minute, isn't that a character from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Miss Minerva? All right, whatever, I'll bite. She says, Johnny, this article just came across my desk and it makes so much sense. I'm a world-class procrastinator myself, but this article was a real wake-up call for me, like stepping on a shard of glass. All right, so let me paraphrase this stepping on a shard of glass article for you. I don't know where she got this from, but here goes. The world, it seems, has become unrecognizable in less than a decade, and not just my world. It's amazing when you think about it how quickly the world can radically change, sometimes for better, most times for worse. We've seen plenty of examples of this in our lifetimes. For example, in 1995, hardly anyone had ever heard of the internet, but by 2005, it's so ubiquitous we couldn't imagine our lives without it. Then, in the year 2000, hardly anyone had a mobile phone, but by 2010, everyone had one, even shoeshine boys. At the start of 2007, no one had ever seen a touchscreen phone either, or a smartphone. Steve Jobs would unveil the first ever iPhone in January of that year. And in less than a decade, our entire species has become completely zombified, swiping and scrolling our lives away while we talk, eat, drive, and without ever looking up. We're living through another great change right now, a powerful, dangerous social trend that's being driven by anger and ignorance. Think about it. Just 5 years or so ago, things kind of felt normal. At least you could go on with your life and your daily routine without having to second-guess everything you wrote online or said. Of course, there was always political bickering and ideological conflict, but regular discourse was pretty civil. No one advocated for violence or called someone a racist simply for having a different opinion. That was our world back then, some 5 years ago. Then, all of a sudden, in late 2015, people started becoming completely unglued. At first, the madness was isolated in liberal universities and certain pockets of social media. We saw crybaby snowflake students in California and on the East Coast physically blocking certain speakers from setting foot on campus, attacking, blocking, and reporting anyone whose opinions they found offensive. Like most movements, this one started slowly, but quickly gathered momentum. Suddenly, it became acceptable to expect everyone else to conform to your whiny sensitivities. Terms like safe space entered the lexicon and social justice warriors, too. They started demanding that we avoid using certain everyday words and pronouns to ensure that no one would be offended. At the same time, socialists came out of hiding and quickly became mainstream. Some of the most popular politicians in the world today are card-carrying socialists. It doesn't matter that the socialist experiment has been tried in 40 different countries and it failed in every one. Seems as long as one's baby boomer parents or grandparents offer a safety net if you fail. That seems to be a prerequisite for a champagne socialist. Take Bernie Sanders, a socialist who came out of hiding and quickly became mainstream. With a number of recent polls, CBS and YouGov, to be specific, show him winning the national election in November. Today's leading socialists, or social democrats, as they like to call themselves, say they don't like wealthy people at all. They dislike capitalists and are uncomfortable with people and businesses making a profit, believing most big private industries should be owned and controlled by the government. Then came another twist. 5 years after it all started, these same movements have merged together and are becoming violent. Thugs now roam the streets of major cities, physically assaulting anyone they deem an enemy of their movement. For example, at one recent protest in California, a conservative politician was threatened by an Antifa thug who said, "I just want you dead. You're a racist. I can tell by looking at you." Meanwhile, protesters held up signs saying, "You can't have capitalism without racism." All that now is considered acceptable mainstream thinking. And not just in the USA. It's true all over the world, especially in Europe. Like a runaway freight train, it's picking up speed. If you live up in the States, you might just think it's one of those crazy passing phases and simply hope that eventually it all goes away. That someday soon, people will come to their senses and sanity will be restored. But as the saying goes in the military, hope is not a course of action. And if we take history as any judge, it's unlikely this trend will go gentle into the night. All indicates it's accelerating. And just like other major trends, this one stands to fundamentally transform the way we live, the way we work and do business too. If you're living in the States, just think about this. This movement, which is growing stronger day by day, wants to seize private property, nationalize industries, raise taxes because these things will cost big money, further bankrupting an already bankrupt treasury, whilst labeling all white males as racist and physically assaulting and muffling intellectual dissenters. All of this will mean more heavily uniformed and outfitted police and law enforcement, since more and more we're seeing average people become irrational and prone to violence. Your options? Accept this new and crazy paradigm, stay and tough it out, or even join in. Or as some are doing right now, hunker down and become a clandestine prepper, or make up your mind right now to get moving on that plan B, the objective being get the hell out of Dodge. At least have a viable escape plan and a place to go when it all gets too outrageous and the shit really does hit the fan. So that came from Miss Minerva, who says in her PS, I'll be coming with a friend to your next Expat Insider Seminar. I understand it's coming up sometime in July 2020. Please put me on your list. All right, Miss M, got you down. By the way, the dates are all set for my upcoming Expat Insider Seminar. It'll be a week long and taking place in two Central American countries again, Guatemala and El Salvador. And the dates, Friday, July 10th, 2020, through Thursday, July 16th. I'll be posting more information and details on the seminar in about a week, so check out my new website, expatplanb.com, for the updates. Oh, and don't forget to go to expatplanb.com to pick up your Latin American healthcare report. It's updated and revised, more than 100 pages for 2020 and beyond, with everything you need to know about doctors, hospitals, clinics, and Latin American healthcare plans for gringos and expats. Wherever you are on your Plan B, you're going to need it. So go to expatplanb.com and check it out. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.